from around the globe. In sold-out arenas and humble churches. From out on the streets. To your screen. And now, the conclusion of Holy Day of Atonement 2012. Guidance for our president and our nation. On this edition of Farrakhan Speaks.
Now, you may not have known this, those of you who are 17 years or rather 10 years old or even 20 years old. When 9/11 happened, which was September the 11th, 2001, we held a press conference at Mosque Mariam 5 days later, where I was guided to say that this so-called war on terror is really a war against Islam. I want you to put my press conference up so that the world can see what I said 5 days after, and it made more sense than what any American leader or religious leader said. Go read it for yourself. God has raised a guide for you. These wars of aggression have now enveloped nearly all of the Muslim countries. I wrote a letter to George W. Bush right after 9/11, the 1st of December 2001.
That's right.
And I warned him about his response to what happened. I wrote that his anger would blind him if he allowed it to dictate his response. Listen to what I was guided to write. Afghanistan is only a preliminary to a much wider war, which is already planned. Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, you didn't hear me.
Go ahead.
This is proved today, too, to be true. This war also has a home front aspect to it as well. But should you persist in this, you will do what no Islamic leader is able to do. No leader of any Muslim nation can call for jihad or holy war and cause the Muslim world to obey that call. However, Mr. President, if you follow what you have in your mind, which many of those around you are encouraging you to do, then you will do what Osama bin Laden and no Muslim extremist could ever do. You will unite the Muslim world in hostility against America and Great Britain. And you will use your great position of power inadvertently to call for a holy war against the West. You will force the more moderate Islamic regimes either not to side with you or to side with you at the risk of being overthrown by growing Islamist forces within their countries. Listen. The coalition that you are gathering will fall away from you, and you will have to pursue this war alone. That letter is a beautiful letter full of prophecies that have now been fulfilled. Go read it for yourself. This year, France announced it will pull out of Afghanistan ahead of the U.S. and NATO, and at the start of the invasion of Iraq, 38 nations provided troops. By 2009, 14 nations had withdrawn ahead of America, and the Muslim world now perceives America as using the war on terror as an excuse to attack Islam. According to the Pew Research Global Attitude Project, the favorability rating of the United States, while once high, has now plummeted. I also wrote, I'm afraid that this extended war may take a turn that you and your advisors least expect and involve America in the greatest of all wars, the War of Armageddon, in which no nation will be left out, including Russia and China. What is the result of his heedlessness to good counsel? Tensions with Iran and the conflict in Syria have united China and Russia against America. Both countries vetoed U.S.-backed UN Security Council resolutions threatening the Syrian government with sanctions three times, and China and Russia have both said they oppose any military intervention against Iran. China is importing oil from Iran against U.S. interests, while Russia is building a nuclear power plant in Iran. A former top Russian general said this year that an attack on Iran by America or Israel would be an attack on Russian interests. Now, President Bush did not heed that advice. Now, I don't know whether President Obama read that letter, but he sure started his presidency in the spirit of that letter. He wanted to bring so-called rogue nations around, offering them not a clenched fist, but an open hand. Everything that he did to try and implement the good of that letter and the good that was in his heart, the arrogant, racist, greedy element in America set out to destroy it, and in so doing, they have really destroyed themselves. And unfortunately, they have also destroyed Obama and made him now an agent of their wicked policies against the Muslim world. Did not you hear me say a few years ago to watch the weather?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Come on now, we gonna talk.
Yes,
you don't have nobody else to compare me with,
yes,
but my Father.
Yes,
listen,
yes, sir.
I told you, watch the weather. The distress would come, the fall of your dollar, the weakness of your economy. This is what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has said, and this is what his faithful minister has said. In 2011, President Obama shattered the single-year record for disaster declarations with 242 disasters in total. Before him, only President George W. Bush declared more, having signed an average of 129 disaster declarations a year while in office. He was in office 8 years. And every year of his 8 over 125, 29 disasters a year. Now watch this. After 2011, which has the record of disasters, I said again, watch the weather. Because God don't fight with your cheap weapons. God fights with the forces of nature. Rain, hail, snow, wind, drought. He uses the insects and the animals and turns nature against you. You can't win in a war against God. But keep on going. You'll understand it better, not by and by, but very soon. So, after repeated warnings that go unheeded, the problem is getting worse. So the Quran says, whenever Allah sends you a messenger, then he seizes the people with distress and affliction, not to destroy them, but that they might humble themselves to a messenger that comes to them from among the meanest of the people. See, an arrogant leader want to know, well, what credentials do you have? What college did you matriculate from? Your colleges don't prepare messengers.
That's right.
Your colleges prepare those who bow down and serve you. Well, now if we just look at the distress and affliction that America is under as we speak, and the result of that distress is how you've handled the warning from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his faithful minister to you. You've done everything you could, and you are still planning to destroy me and the Nation of Islam. Yes. But all that I have said you would do, you have done. You've killed Gaddafi. He's no more. You've killed Saddam Hussein. He's no more. You've killed Osama bin Laden. He's no more. But your problems are greater now than they were then. My brother Gaddafi opened the door to you. He wanted to come in out of the cold, and you sent Stevenson. And he found himself in Benghazi, among the enemies of Gaddafi, working while Gaddafi had opened the door for him. He was working to destroy the revolution of Gaddafi and to destroy Gaddafi. And so you sent weapons. You sent your planes and your bombs. And you killed my brother. But you were so anxious to destroy him. You were feeding Al-Qaeda.
Go ahead.
You were feeding religious extremists.
Go ahead.
So it's only natural that he should go to Benghazi and meet his fate from those whom he was educating to destroy. A man and a revolution. And some of you are now saying that if Gaddafi were alive, Stevenson would still be alive, because that country would still be under control. Now don't come here expecting me to be no Watertown Farrakhan. Don't come here for that. Come here because you are interested in hearing truth from a man who's not afraid to tell the truth, even at the cost of my own life. We told the leadership conference yesterday. I know they plan to kill me, but it won't happen. You plan against my family, but you can't come to me and tell me you're gonna kill my dear wife of 59 years and tell me if I don't stop talking, you're gonna kill my wife. Or you gonna kill my children? I said, kill them all. We were born to die.
Yes, sir.
We were born to die. But I know damn well you'll never kill my family unless it pleases Allah. You love life. Because we know we will never die.
That's right.
I'll come back from the grave to put my foot in your behind.
Go ahead, Father. Go ahead. Go ahead.
About to come out of Iraq, but what have you left behind? You're talking about coming out of Afghanistan, but what the bleeding and the dying is still going on. What you have left behind is worse than what you found, and your condition is worse now than it was in the 80s and the 90s. So after the warning that Allah gave me to give to Bush, he left office in disgrace. He was so disgraced that you wouldn't even invite him to your Republican convention because you did not want his presence to cast a dark shadow over the man that you had elected to be your standard bearer. So you have hamstrung a she-camel. But I am the she-camel. I'm gonna make it very plain. If you got time to hang with me. Look here. Look at this. I'm saying this to Muslims now, because you all gonna have to study. All of the punishments that are written in the Quran never came to pass in the time of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him.
That's right. That's right.
Never. But every plague that is written in the Quran is going to come to pass in America under the modern Pharaoh, in the modern Rome, in the modern Babylon, in the modern Sodom and Gomorrah. Take it on, let it alone. So it looked like President Obama understood our attempt to guide President Bush, because you campaigned on a platform of change which resonated with the American people and with the people of the world. They had hope that maybe you would change the direction of the nation from where Bush had taken it. And in the beginning, it seemed as though you did want to do that. But unfortunately, you fell in with the neoconservatives. And you started fulfilling the agenda of all the former presidents against Iraq, against Libya, against Cuba, against Iran, against Korea, Somalia. And everywhere you see Islam rising, America did not want an Islamist state to follow. And you say you want a moderate Muslim. You got the right question. What is that? Here's the Quran. I'd like to ask the Quran. Is there such a thing as a moderate Muslim? Either you are or you are not. Here's a book that represents moderation. Oh yeah. This book tells us avoid extremes, for most extreme is sin.
That's right.
Well, you say, Farrakhan, it seems extreme for you to take an adulteress and give her 80 stripes or behead somebody that's a Jew according to Jewish law for adultery and fornication and for killing homosexuals and all of that. That seems very extreme. It is. I want you to follow this. See, Master Farad came. And he taught us Sharia. Listen. Just give me a little time, man. Healing grace. He taught us, and his servant Elijah Muhammad taught us, that I'm teaching you how to respect the law so that you can go anywhere in the dominant Muslim world and be at ease in a society that imposes Sharia.
That's right.
We didn't smoke. They do. We didn't drink. Some of them do. But the good ones, they won't. We didn't use drugs. We didn't fornicate, commit adultery, kill our babies through abortion. We followed the law.
That's right.
The law of God. We know, listen to me good, that imposing the strictness of Sharia after coming out of a loose, corrupt government.
Go ahead, Brother Minister.
Is wrong.
Right.
When a people have been under those who are the enemies of Allah, and have lived loosely, you have to gradually bring them back to the strictness of God's law. But if you just put it on them, which one of you are holy enough to kill people who offend God's law? When you, the leaders, are the biggest offenders of the laws of God. We have a modern meaning given by Master Farid Muhammad to Sharia. Those of you who think Sharia is a curse, we have written a book called The Restrictive Law of Islam Is Our Success. Go take it and read it and call me back and tell me that this is not a law that if we lived in America and the American people would be safe.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now, I have a few words for the Muslim world. We have a thing in Islam called honor killings.
Yes, sir. Let's listen.
Some have come to America and their daughters have fallen in love and they have offended the honor of their families and the law, and the mother and the father have killed them. They call it honor killing. I'm saying to you, go back to your country. You're in America now. You're in a place that don't have no respect for righteous law. What the hell did you bring your daughter here for? And put her in an environment where sex and fornication and freakishness is the order of the day. And if she falls victim to that, you have the nerve to kill her? What did you come here for? A little girl in Pakistan was shot in her head and in her neck by someone who claimed to be a Muslim, denying her the right to be educated. Our world of Islam needs to be reformed. And that reform will not be guided by those in the East. That guidance for reform of the Islamic world is coming out of the West, and we are that light. Muslims. There are 99 attributes of God. These are his names. But there's a feminine part to practically all of the attributes. How could I be Hakim and my wife Hakima? Hakim means one possessed of wisdom. Then if my wife is Hakima, how would you deny her knowledge which would raise her level of civilization among the beasts of the field? How could you deny knowledge to a female? What kind of Muslim are you? Now we challenge Muslims in America. Rise up and educate your people. Know that you're in an environment that is lawless. And if your daughter slips, be merciful. Bring her home. The dishonor is you killing her. Jesus had a woman brought to him who was found in adultery. And the lawful Jews of that time found her in adultery. But it was only she that came before Jesus. I don't quite understand that. Somebody commits adultery by themselves. This is going on in the Muslim world right as we speak. A man can do it and get away with it, but the woman is charged. See, you're sexist. There's no justice in your works. You will be uprooted. It won't be long now. Allah is not pleased with you. Know this, that your days are short. We have to clean up the house of Islam. Yes, sir. Well, you Christians, is your house clean? Come on! Then if we're going to clean up the house of Islam, you clean up the house of Christianity. It is full of hypocrisy. Clean up the house of Judaism. It is full of hypocrisy. Clean up the house of religion. Well, I guess, America, you'll have to search now for a moderate Muslim. And by moderate Muslim, you mean a moderate Muslim to America is a Muslim that will countenance America's foreign policy and directives. And if that foreign policy counters justice and truth of this book, then all of us have to stand with the truth of this book. And that will mean we'll have to stand against your policies if your policies go counter to what is right, what is true, what is fair, what is just. There's no such thing as a moderate Muslim. All Muslims live their lives according to the will and law of God. Even in the time of Paul, when the authorities in Rome wanted him not to preach in Jesus' name, that you can preach whatever you preach, just don't preach in his name. Paul answered, "Shall I obey man? Or shall I obey God?" See, and if you are true to your faith, Christian and Muslim, you will love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. See? And if you're a true Muslim, your oath is, my prayer, my sacrifice, my life, and my death is all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. There is no compromise with unrighteousness. Minister, are you homophobic? No, I don't fear homosexuals or lesbians or transgender people. I fear for them. Wait a minute. You have become so deviant from the word of God found in Torah, in gospel and Quran. Now you want to change God's way as though God don't know what he's doing. And you judges, you pastors, you bishops, you imams even, that call yourself an imam and have a homosexual mosque. I say, well, Farrakhan, you sound hateful. No, no, no. Any homosexual that is in this audience, your brother loves you. Wait a minute. Because ain't none of us free from sin. None of us can throw down on somebody else and their faults when nobody is perfect. Nobody. I love my homosexual sister and brother. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told me not to worry about you, because Allah has something for you. And you can interpret that any way you want. But what Allah has for you is good for you. He didn't come to destroy us. He came to retrieve us. He came to transform our lives. I know the press is going to have a field day on this. But I have to say what I have to say. Now, look here. It's something that America is spreading democracy abroad by the use of the sword. The same thing you accuse Prophet Muhammad of doing, spreading Islam by the sword. Now you have your bases everywhere. You're trying to spread your brand of radical democracy at the threat of the sword, or at the threat of holding back from other nations' aid to them. You have 1,077 U.S. military bases dotting the globe, but what they call black budgets or covert secret principles in these budgets, nobody actually knows for sure. America, you don't have much more time. in the early 70s, Tony Brown invited all black leaders to go on television to answer a question: is it too late? The question that is before us: is it too late to do the necessary thing to right the ship of state? Is it too late? Because when you have been diagnosed with an illness that could potentially become terminal, the time to act is the moment you get the news. But if you delay in acting, the disease continues unabated, and when it starts attacking your vital organs, that is when you want to now take the medicine. But then the question becomes, is it too late? I think that no matter what we say, it may very well be too late. I think the madness in America has reached the point where they will openly want to kill the righteous. It has reached a point of madness where they say, if I'm going down, I'm taking everybody down with me. That's madness. We are right back to the god of the moon, who couldn't get all of the people on the planet at the time when moon and earth were one.
That's right.
To speak the same dialect.
Yes, that's right.
So he drilled a hole in the then called moon and set it off.
Yes. Go ahead. Oh.
It fell 36,000 miles and was shot out 12,000 miles, and the water from the moon fell to this part called earth, so that the earth is 3/4 water, 1/4 land, and the moon that once had water is now the means of attracting the waters of the earth and balancing the waters of the earth so that the water does not drown out civilization. So white folks, you are the god of your world. You are the god of your world. This is your world. This is not God's world. This is your world. I know what you want to say. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever would believe in him would not perish but have everlasting life. Right but wrong. God never loved this world. He preached the doom of this world before it even came into existence. Yes, yes, yes. God so loved the world, the definite article, the world that he's bringing in through El Mahdi and the Messiah. He's bringing in a new world, and he loved that world so much. Whosoever believed in that one who would bring in that world, you would not perish, but you would become a part of a world that would see no end. It's called everlasting life. It's called the hereafter. Oh, who wouldn't want to be a part of that world? Well, now I think I want to bring this part of the lecture to a conclusion. I can't do all that I have here. God gave this to me 10 days or so ago. I think it was on the 5th of October. 9 days ago, I sat with my research team, and the words just flowed out of my mouth, and they recorded it and transcribed it. And as I read it, I said, oh, God, this is so much. I can't say all of this like this. And the more I read it, I saw the power in what Allah had given me to say. And it's now 4:15. If you give me... No, I still won't finish. So part two is next Sunday at Mosque Mariam in Chicago, Illinois. We've got to finish this entire lecture. But look, now, how many of you saw the debate the other night? How many? Would you raise your hands? Were you somewhat disappointed? Raise your hands if you were disappointed. It was like your champion didn't show up for the fight. Didn't it look to you like he was not focused? Didn't it look to you like something else was on his mind?
Right, sir. Yes, it did.
I'm not making excuses for him. I just have to tell you what he looked like to me.
That's right.
Did you know that in any part of a minute, anything that goes on in the world that ill affects America's vital interests, he knows about it shortly after it happens. Every morning, he gets what is called a briefing book. Everything that's going on in the world, he has to read it. Ask yourself, what did he read that day? What was said to him that day? On the 1st of October, they showed a tape recording of a speech that he made in 2007. Look at my brother. He looked somewhat bewildered. Oh, there's been many things said since the debate, right?
Yes, sir.
They said Romney went away from all his positions that he had been speaking for the last year and a half, and it threw Barack off.
Yes.
I ain't buying it.
Go ahead, brother.
If you're a fighter, and you preparing for your opponent, you study his movements, you study his fights, and you work your strategy out according to how he presents himself. If he changes his strategy and comes out fighting different, and you lose the first round or the second round, when you go back to your corner, it's called adjustment time. Every good fighter knows how to make an adjustment. So if Mr. Romney was doing something different, you make an adjustment. You don't get lost in what he did.
That's right.
But something was bothering our brother. Listen to this. When that video was played of his speech in 2007, they said Obama was talking to a black audience. You notice when he talks to black audiences, he talks different than when he talks to white audiences.
Yes, go ahead.
In other words, he's a chameleon. His language, his speech pattern was different. And then they characterize his talk as though he's an angry, say it loud.
That's right.
So if he's angry and they're putting that out 2 days before the debate, his handlers, who that man up in Massachusetts, what his name? No, his advisor, Axelrod.
David Axelrod.
Yeah, David. He didn't give him 5 smooth stones, though. He told him, look, President, they're characterizing you as an angry black man. So you can't go out there and beat up on this white man, because then you're going to look like an angry black man and you're going to lose a white vote. And I don't know whether he fell for that, but on radio in Chicago, they were saying that Michelle was upset with the advice that he got. I don't know the truth of that. But let's say he was advised. You know how it is when you want your man to throw the fight? Because you had bet on the other man while you claimed to be for your man? I'm not saying that that's the case. But damn! Do you know Obama is a warrior? You can see in his eyes when he's determined. He's a fighter. He was just off that night. Now I would say to our dear brother, look, you're not gonna win any more white votes by being kind and gracious. You are already kind. You are already gracious. Every time Obama tried to be a little black, not even some black, just a little black. You remember when Professor Louis Gates was trying to fit a key into his door? Somebody said there's a Negro over there trying to rob the man's house. The police came and he said, look, man, this is my own house. They arrested him. And he's a friend of the president. The president rose. Hey. He didn't quite say it like that. But what he said was in defense of his brother. There was a big pushback. Then the police and Henry Louis Gates are at the White House. It's a teachable moment. When Trayvon Martin got shot down, the president said, if I had a son, my son would look like Trayvon Martin.
That's right.
Now he's in trouble. But you took sides. He spoke out. See, when white folk hire you, and I have to say it like that, they want you to be all the way for them. Even Miss Oprah. She went down to South Carolina to fight in the preliminaries for Mr. Obama. Immediately, she was not the darling Oprah anymore. She had to pull back from the thing. See, you need somebody that's going to stand up for you. You need somebody that is not afraid to go to bat for you. You need somebody that will argue the case for you. And God has heard your cry and given you a champion in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his faithful minister. So, next Sunday, we're going to give solutions to the debt problem. Tune in. If it is the will of God, next Sunday, what about the immigration problem? We have guidance for the president on the immigration problem. Yeah. What about the lead up to the war with Iran? Go ahead. We have guidance for the government of America. All of these things that America is facing, she needs solutions to, but the solutions are going to have to be radical. So don't get up yet. You owe me 5 more minutes. My brother debated, and he had 39 minutes and change, and Romney had 38 minutes. And they say he spoke 27 myths in 38 minutes. Have you heard that?
Yes, sir.
Did you hear that?
Yes, sir.
I'm not making that up.
Oh, sure you know.
What is a myth? Oh. You see, it don't have to be a lie. A myth could be rooted in facts, but it's still a mythological conclusion based on erroneous interpretation of a fact. But let's look at the dictionary. A myth is a traditional or legendary story, usually concerning some being or hero or event, with or without a determinable basis of fact or a natural explanation, especially one that is concerned with deities or demigods and explains some practice, rite, or phenomenon of nature. That's a myth. One of the definitions. A second definition, an invented story.
Yeah.
an idea or a concept. His account of the event is pure myth. And the third definition is an unproved or false collective belief that is used to justify a social institution. Now, when I said, what is a myth, somebody hollered out, a lie. And a lie is a false statement made with deliberate intent to deceive, an intentional untruth, an outright falsehood. So if in 38 minutes a man spoke 27 lies, myth, a lie a minute, myth. Performance on a night when the brother was off base. Well, dear President, you got to remember you're fighting for your presidential life. You're fighting for the vision that you have for the Democratic Party and for the country. You said there are two distinct paths that are diametrically opposed, different. This is what you said. Then if you're willing to fight for your vision, then next Tuesday, come out ready to fight for what you believe is in the best interest of the country. And maybe you can regain your place. Now, I close for now. I've had a wonderful time. I'm not happy because I didn't really say all that God had put on me to say. But it's so powerful. You just have to tune in, same time, same station. It won't be in Charlotte, but it'll be on the internet, inshallah, next Sunday, part two. It's called Guidance for Our President and Our Nation. Our nation. Our nation. Our nation. Now, listen. In closing, listen to the words of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He said, this election, he was speaking in the 60s, this election is one of the most serious in the history of American government. Would you say the same exists today? Because either party that seeks the office of presidency is faced with the problem of saving the lives of the American people. If the present party, at that time it was Democratic, remains in office, you know the answer. If the Republican Party takes over, you should know the answer. Sure. There will be a lull before the storm. The storm can be delayed. And every hour and day that it can be delayed is two your benefit.
Yes, sir.
Now let me close with this statement. Neither President Obama and the Democratic Party or Mitt Romney and the Republican Party can save the American people. Listen, just listen. It takes a radical solution, and you can't lie to the American people and produce the right guidance for the American people on the basis of a lie. If you vote for Romney, I'm not talking to you. If you vote for Romney, I'm not talking to you. The white folks who are ready to vote for him, listen to me good. That man is in a bubble. And his bubble is not real. He's a cheerleader. Sis Boomba, rah, rah, rah. Come on, white team. Let's get that Negro out of office. See, that's a rallying cry of a man that has no plan. And he doesn't have a plan. I will return jobs. I did it at Bain Capital. Not in this climate, Mr. Romney. You've already went to Israel and bowed down. This is how I'm closing. He went to Israel and wore out his knees. Got a patch now on his knees. He told Israel and his dear friend Netanyahu, we're not gonna let Iran get a nuclear bomb. Obama's talking, but we'll back you. See? Now you're already broke. You ain't got no money. Where you gonna get the money to wage another war when you broke spending borrowed money on the wars that you just started? Somebody got to say it. America, you broke. If there's another war, you're going to have to borrow some money. Who you going to borrow it from? You're not borrowing it from China. But the Federal Reserve is ready to print. Print up as much as you want. Federal Reserve, because it's your end too. Printing money with no backup. And every day that they print more money, the value of the money you got in your pocket goes down. This is the silliness, the foolishness of your leaders.
We'll fix it.
But Obama, he almost wore out his knees too. Well, I mean, he may not have a patch on his knee, but he was down there long enough to rub a little something in that knee. He told Israel, AIPAC, American Israeli Political Action Committee. He told them, even though we're in an economic downturn, don't you worry. Because the money that we've been giving to you, we're going to give it to you again and add some more to it. If that ain't deep knee bending. Now, I'm not making stuff up. We're in bad shape, brother. Now, if, remember this, Israel is the third most powerful nuclear nation in the world. Did you know that?
Think about it.
Israel will not confirm or deny that she's a nuclear power.
Think about it.
But Israel never signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Israel would not allow any atomic energy experts to come in and inspect her nuclear plant in Dimona, Israel.
Think about it.
But now she is the prosecuting attorney for non-nuclear Iran, which the Khomeini, Ali Khomeini, the Ayatollah of Iran, issued a fatwa, a ruling that atomic weapons is against Islam. I'm not so sure about that though, brother. I heard something from my teacher. I don't know whether it's wise to say it, but I'm going to say it. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that teachers are going to come to teach the black man and woman everything that we would need to build an independent existence, even down to the peaceful or non-peaceful use of the atom. Those are his words to me. Now here. You can't go to a gunfight with a tomahawk. The only reason America not bothering Korea, because she can fight back. As long as Gaddafi was making nuclear and weapons of mass destruction, they talk about Gaddafi, but they weren't messing with him. They want to make sure that Pakistan keeps a good grip on her nuclear power.
That's right.
And America's always plotting how to get in and get it. China got it.
Yes, sir.
So India, next door to China, they don't get along sometime on the border, so India got hers. Pakistan and India don't get along, so Pakistan said, hell, I'm gonna get mine too.
That's right.
Now see, one thing about a bully, he don't, you may not have as many as he got, but if you got one and know where to throw it, he's gonna talk to you. Now listen, let's have a talk. You can't even dialogue with Israel because they got and you don't have. But if you attack Iran, oh, that's going to be catastrophic, according to the former Minister of Defense, Secretary of Defense, Gates. Now, if they do attack Iran, what is our position going to be? All right, Muslims.
Yes, sir.
All right, Americans. What is your position?
Well, I don't know. I have to fight for my country. Yes, it is yours. But you better have a stake in it before you go fight. See, Elijah Muhammad said, we can't spend our lives taking the lives of others if we don't have something to fight for. Yes, it's ours, but how much land do we own in America that would allow us to produce an existence for ourselves and our people? Hell no. No, this is our country. Then give us a part of it. No, listen. You gotta talk like this.
Yes.
You gotta think like this.
That's right.
It is ours.
Yes, it is.
But you don't own no land that you can call your own. And that's why it's in the Quran, Moses and Aaron, oh boy, they were talking about land, and it was God talking.
That's right.
God says, listen, none of you own the land. Allah created this. He is the owner. And He allows humans to steward what He created. And then Allah says in the Quran that He's the owner of it all. And listen to His words. He takes the kingdom from whom He pleases. And He gives it to whom He pleases. I have said, and they have not challenged me effectively, that we are the real children of Israel that you find mentioned in the Bible and the Quran. And if we are the children of Israel and we are, God promise us a land flowing with milk and honey, because that's the only way we'll be able to provide a future for ourselves and our people. So He takes the kingdom from whom He pleases. And then He said, I will give the land to you, and then see how you act. Now, if you act like those whom He may displace, you won't hold it long. If you're going to be corrupt and rotten and unjust and mistreat people who don't have your color, are not a part of your creed, are not from your class, then you will be uprooted. But you've got to be a different kind of people. That will give justice to all, regardless of creed or class or color. And you've got to be grown up by God to have that kind of mind, that no person living under your roof will be deprived of freedom, of justice, and equality. That's your destiny. So I thank you all for listening. May Allah bless you as I greet you in peace. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you, brothers and sisters. Can I ask you a question? How many of you believe that what you heard taught today is true and is good for us and America as a people? How many of you agree? Let me see your hands. Raise them high. Good. Then if you agree that it's true, Shouldn't we work together as a people to produce a good future for ourselves and our people?
Yes,
Muslims, Christians, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, white, black, Jews, Gentiles. See, once you have the right base, you can unite the whole of humanity as the prophet wanted to see it, as Jesus came to produce it, one world, one faith, one Lord, one baptism. That's the world that's coming in, and you have been chosen to bring that kind of world in. Thank you for listening, and may God bless you as I greet you in peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Please log on again next week and every week this year for The Time and What Must Be Done. Tell your friends, tell your family. Log on to noi.org every Saturday, 6 p.m. Central Time for truth, guidance, and unequaled love from the national representative of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Pass on the word every Saturday at 6 p.m. Central Time at noi.org. The Time and What Must Be Done. Remember, to have Minister Farrakhan answer your questions, tweet them to @LouisFarrakhan, #AskFarrakhan. And to add this message to your library or as a gift for someone you love, go to store.finalcall.com.